Digging through the past is not that hard. Rusted cars and broken shards. Mining memories in an old wrecking yard. Echoes of laughter. Whispers.
Welcome to the Wrecking Yard. I'm Jerry Wayne Longmire. Y'all, presumably still y'all. All are welcome in the Church of Internal Combustion. We just ask that you show up with an open heart. Still don't have any new sponsors, so I'm just going to promote my cousin because, bless him, he's up there trying to make it. If you're in the East Texas area, the 903 area code, and you need your RV or your boat detailed or even a car, man, reach out to my cousin Rick at Rick's RV Wash, man. He'll take care of you. He does a fine job. He's got a good thing going up there, man. And I'd like to see him succeed in it. And I'll put the phone number and a little copy of the card right there so you can check it out for all your fine mobile detailing needs. Rick's RV Wash. He's right there in Tyler, Texas. Takes care of most of the 903. There you go. Woo, it's been a day, boy. Today is Friday here at the Wrecking Yard. I'm recording kind of in the evening, like 6 o'clock. Sun's still out. We are getting some lovely weather right now in Houston. What's the temperature-mometer say? We'll see. Well, that's here in the garage. It's a little warmer here in the garage. Outside, it's a breezy 70, and it's... We don't get many of them. We take advantage of them when we get them. I have been out on the screen porch all day. And then Rachel and I have been outside a lot working on the property. I think she has single-handedly saved her great-grandmother's azaleas. And what are those? Yesterday, today's, and tomorrow's, I think is what they're called. I always screw it up. But she had some of those planted on the back of the house, and we weeded the bed the other day, and Rachel's been out there pruning them and getting them all ready, and they look spectacular. They're already busting some flowers out. I had a interesting morning, for sure. Sorry, I've got to start my timer. I had an interesting morning. I went to the gym this morning, as I tend to just go every other day, whatever day of the week that is. Doesn't really matter to me. This week, it kind of goes back and forth because you've got an odd number of days in the week. This week, I went this morning. See if I can spit all that out. It kind of shook me, man. I went to the gym about 10, just like I normally do. And usually, right, the first thing I do when I go into my gym is I go do, they have this thing, it's a booth, it's called Total Body Enhancement. And it's supposedly, it's like red light therapy. You stand in this like tall tube and all this red light shines on you. But it's got this thing under your feet that wiggles, right? And you stand on it, and there's different programs for how much wiggle you want, what have you. I don't know if the red light therapy does anything. I'm not 100% convinced of its, helpfulness. I don't know. I can't tell you if that shit's any good for you. I did read something about most of those booths just use regular, random long lights or the tubes. I can't even remember what the hell they're called. So I don't even know if that shit's real. You know, what I do know is that when I was first being strength trained way back in the day when I was younger, the guy would have me do all this stuff to lubricate my joints and get my joints all loose and, you know, active, all these little exercises. But what happens when I stand on that wiggly plate is it does the same thing in about 12 minutes. About 12 minutes of my body just being and my teeth rattled out. All my joints are loosened up and lubricated and all the cartilage feels good. And I have like a brief, like a 45 minutes of, whoa, what basically occurs as a result of me doing this little 10 to 12 minutes every time I go in the gym before I go work out is I kind of already feel warmed up. You know, I've been in those lights and take my shirt off, getting there and just my joints are all loosened up. I'm ready to go, you know, kind of get my head right while I'm in there, get my music going. And I go to a Planet Fitness. I have a Planet Fitness membership. And it's the easiest thing for me because they're everywhere. Anytime I travel, they're easy to find. It's what I like. Today, when I walked out of the red light booth, I come out of their little, you know, special area. It's got all the tanning beds and all that bullshit and massage chairs. And went to go. I always pick the same locker. I'm a creature of habit. I always pick the same locker. And usually what I do is when I walk out of there, it's I usually pick the top locker, the very first top locker, if nobody's using it. It's usually empty, put the stuff in there. Go on my day. Sunglasses, my AirPod case, and my keys. Keep my wallet in my pocket because I ain't stupid. And then I go, I don't even put a lock on. Sunglasses, AirPod case, my keys. I take my water. I make a beeline for the weights. And I bust weights for 30 minutes. And then I get on the treadmill for 30 minutes. It's just, I'm a creature of habit. I did all those things today. I come out of there, blip. And while I was putting my stuff in that top locker, somebody bumped into me and they were running. I had my headphones on. And I look to the left and on the back row of treadmills right there, right at the back of them, is a dude. I see him in the gym all the time. He's a Latino dude. He's maybe my age, maybe a little older. He's got some salt and pepper going on in his hair, short haircut, pretty physically fit, good shape dude. Like he looks like he's in pretty good shape. He's got a lot of muscle definition, all good stuff. Not crazy big, like a bodybuilder. You know, not like anybody trying to do that, but just like a dude looks like he's in pretty good shape. Except for right now, he is wadded up at the base of one of those treadmills, like just. Have you ever seen, like, not everybody's seen it. I've you know, seen it a few times in my life. But when somebody gets their lights cut off, I mean, like, really, like, incident. Not like in a movie where somebody gets shot and they fly or they get punched and they fly. But somebody really gets their lights cut out, like somebody cuts the power. People's bodies fall weird. They just sort of crumple into themselves. Like, I saw a dude get hit in a fist fight outside a bar one night, and we were worried the dude was dead because the way he fell. He just like fell into himself. It just hit him just right, cut them lights out, you know? And if you've ever seen that, then you know what it look, people's bodies do weird shit when they fall like that. And this dude like looked like he had cerebral palsy. His legs were turned the wrong way. He was just wadded up, right? Out. I didn't know what happened. I assumed maybe fainted or he passed out or something while he's on the treadmill getting after it. It happens, I'm sure. Maybe had too many energy drinks, maybe too much pre-workout or something. I don't mess with a lot of that stuff, but I've heard, you know, stories about it. This dude was out. And there's a lady that was clearly with him, and she was in tears and worked up, and the Planet Fitness people were over there trying to figure out what to do about it. And the lady and her friend were like moving him around. And there was a big black dude that goes to that gym that I see all the time. He's always got scrubs on. He's going, don't move him. Don't move him. Don't move him. And they were just ignoring the piss out of this dude, moving this guy around, trying to uncrumple him. Get the treadmill turned off, all that good stuff. There's some dude there is an off-duty sheriff's officer. He jumps down and starts doing CPR on the guy. They've already called 911. 911's on the way. I mean, I pick all this up. I turn my music off, and I'm listening to the chatter. This little group of people that have converged around this guy. Not much I can do for him, you know? But it was kind of weird You know, this is like, I mean, I'm hesitant to say awkward. That sounds callous, but it's like, oh man, do I go work out or do I just go home? This feels, I feel like I shouldn't be here while this dude's out on the floor like this. I can't be of any help. These people have it under control. And at that point, paramedics, so you see the ambulance pulling up in the parking lot, like, music still, they didn't even turn the music off. Music's still going, you know? So, you know what to do? I just, you know, kind of said a little quick prayer for the guy. Hope he's all right. He's always kind every time I've seen him. And I go over there and start busting weights, you know, doing my thing. But I'm troubled, you know, it's weird. And I do, it was pull day and biceps day. And so I get over there with the free weights and do all my hammer curls and then my supine curls. And I get done with that. I kind of turn around and look over there and they're still doing CPR on this dude. Now there's more paramedics there and a couple more sheriff's officers there. It's a, sorry, cat was acting weird over there. I was trying to figure out what was happening. Troubled me, you know? They've been working on this dude a good 8-9 minutes. Man, put that out of your head, you know? So I go over and, you know, do my rows and go through some. I keep working out. I keep doing my workout, but I keep checking in on this dude. But I notice I'm watching my little Apple Watch. I'm watching my heart rate now. Like, what's going on there? You know what I mean? Like, I now I look over there, man. They got this. I'm towards the end of my weight workout, you know. They've been over there doing CPR on this dude for 20-something minutes, you know. That's not a good sign, you know. You got to make somebody's heart work for them for 20 minutes, you know. And the lady's with him. She's bawling. She's coming apart. And it's weird, though, because there's people still working out, like, right by while. I mean, there's, like, a Stairmaster, and there's some chick over here that's been on the Stairmaster since this happened, getting the work out of her life, and she's just right in front of him, and DJ Khaled's just going, all I do is win, and it's just weird, man. It's a weird situation. Like, it's like a weird little slice of, like, this is, like, this dude's worst day. This chick's having the best workout of her life. DJ Khaled's yap. You know what I mean? Music's going. It's not music you associate with grim circumstances. It's weirded me out, man. I'm like, what? I don't really know what to do in this situation. I'm done. I'm going to go get on a treadmill, and they're picking him up. They've got him on a gurney now, and the only good sign I saw is they had one of those chest, I think it's called like a Lucas chest compression machine. And it, like, they put it on your chest and it does the compressions for you. And he's clearly holding on to it now. His hands are clenched on it. And I don't know if that's involuntary of his own thing. And they got him intubated, one of them ambulatory bags, you know, somebody squeezing the bag. It's a very Grey's Anatomy, you know. Like, they pick him up and they put him on gurney and they, you know, they've already strapped him down and they get him on that gurney. But everybody looks grim. Sheriff's officers, everybody looks, it's a very grim look. Nobody looks like they're winning. You know, there's a look. There's a look. And those people don't look like they're winning. I know I've known a lot of EMTs in my life, a lot of first responders. And there's a look they have when things are going well, and there's a look they have when things didn't go well. You know, and they all have that look that things didn't go great. I've always thought being an EMT must just be a ferocious job to have, because by and large, I know they don't win all the time. You know, I know there's a lot of loss. They take the dude out, and then there's just this pile, like where this dude was right behind this treadmill. There's just pile of trash of like ripped open plastic bags and bandage holders and discarded gloves, even a needle or two. And there's this other little dude from the paramedic with the paramedic, and he's got one of the EMTs, and he's got a, you know, a biohazard waste bag, and he's picking things up, and putting them in this bag, and cleaning the little area up. But the amount of trash that's created when they're trying to, it was interesting, you know, it was weird. And weirded out. I went and got on the treadmill, did my 30 minutes on the treadmill, checking that heart rate, bro. Yeah, I'm like 148. Woo-wee. Let's slow down a little bit there, Cadillac. I mean, like, I just... It's the music going while that was happening. It definitely unlocked a new fear for me. I never even worried about dying in Planet Fitness before today, you know, never in my life. It's usually a happy place. Go in there, people are generally nice to each other. Everybody's kind of getting their workout and their sweat on. There's upbeat music and, you know, bright colors, purple and what have you. And it doesn't seem like a place to die, you know. So it's like and I don't know if the dude died. I don't know if they saved him or not, you know. It's not the kind of thing that makes the Houston news, but. Ooh, that's not where I've been laying on the floor. I mean, the floor stinks in a gym. That's not a place you want to. I don't want to lay on the floor of Planet Fitness and listen to DJ. All I do is win, win, win. Like, what the shit? You know? It's a weird place to have to check out. I mean, granted, he was unconscious, but that girl heard that song, you know? Felt like that song played for 30 minutes. I know there was other music, but that's just the one that sticks in my head. I don't know. I've just always said that. I check out. I want to. I hate being cold. I know I'm already going to be scared, so I'm hoping when I check out, it's, you know, I want the sunshine on my face, you know, outside, warm. I won't be cold. I know you're already cold, you know, when you start dying. I don't want to be cold. I'm already going to be scared. I don't want to be cold, you know. It's weird, man. I said some prayers for that dude. But certainly, like I said, unlocked a new fear for me. That's sure. It's not. You know? I don't want the smell of Planet Fitness to be the last thing I smell. I don't want DJ Khaled to be the last thing I hear. Don't really want to get my ass handed to me by a treadmill, but, you know, probably didn't have a lot of... Oof. Anyways. Enough about that. This is... I'm excited today. Kind of getting back to my roots here, I just wanted to do a car episode, just an episode about a car. And I decided that if I was going to do some more of those, then I wanted to talk about, and if you followed me for any period of time, you know, I have an affectation for this car anyways. But I want to talk about one of my favorite cars that's ever been created. This is one of my favorite automobiles that's ever existed. And that is the De Tomaso Pantera. Specifically, I have a deep appreciation for the 71 and the 72 models. Because I like them when they had the little short chrome bumpers. And I don't like them when they put the big stupid safety bumper on them later. And I really don't like those ones they built in the 80s. That they got the Lamborghini Countach wing and the weird flares. And those just don't do it for me. I like that original look of that car. It's one of my favorite cars ever built. But besides, I was going to talk about this car, I need to do a little research, man. Because I knew quite a bit about them, but I didn't know a lot about like where the onus to create this car come from. So I had to look up the founder, the man that created De Tomaso Automobile. Who is this dude? His name is Alejandro. Sometimes spelled like Alexandro. Alessandro. It's like more Italian spelling. Alejandro De Tomaso. Alejandro De Tomaso comes from a cattle company, a cattle family in Argentina, but they're Italian cattle family. He's born and raised in Argentina. Around 1955, though, he has to flee Argentina. Some of you know your history. You know about the bombing of Mayo Plaza. It was like 30 aircraft from the Argentinian Air Force and Navy. Started attacking their own citizens, man. And supposedly they were going after Perón and Perón supporters. But what they did is they killed a whole bunch of civilians. It's bad, though. I think it's one of the worst terrorist attacks that's ever occurred in Argentina. Argentina had a lot of stuff involved in its politics, particularly after the fall of Germany, because a lot of guys escaped to Argentina and got involved in stuff there. Perón was a big industrialist, and he was not a big fan of the Catholic Church, and he had done a lot of things to piss off the Catholic Church, and Catholic Church at the time had backed this attempted coup that did not go well. And somehow, I could not find exactly how De Tomaso was, how Alejandro was involved in it. I couldn't find any information on that. Other than that, it was alleged that he was involved in this attempted coup, and he had to flee Perón and his people and get the hell out of Argentina. But if you look at the little symbol on a Pantera or even some of their other cars, it's like a little T, and that was their brand. That was their cattle brand in Argentina. Wealthy cattle family. You know, Argentinian cattle, it's a big deal. I think some of them had like a little sideways, like turned up on its side Argentinian flag too. I think that was part of the logo. He runs off to Italy, you know, to escape political and possibly criminal charges. Decides to take up race car driving. He's not great at it. I think he only entered in like 2 Formula One races and won 0 points in any race. I think he came in 9th and then had to leave the Grand Prix in the United States after like 19 laps or something with brake failure. Racing Maseratis and Ferraris. But he decides to start this automobile company. At first, that's all they do is they just build race cars. They build some Formula One cars, some other race cars. In fact, one of their first race cars has the same 4-cylinder that came in a Ford Cortina. He was a big fan of Ford. He was already kind of involved with them. And he actually marries, her name's Isabel Haskell. And her dad or her grandpa, I think it's her grandpa, is William Durant. He's one of the founders of Chevrolet, one of the co-founders of General Motors. I believe he also started Frigidaire. He's a busy guy. She's a race car driver in the United States, but in the United States, she's forced to race against other women. She's not finding that challenging enough. She wants to race against everybody. She wants to race against some of the best. She doesn't like being put in these female-only racing situations. So she decides to move. She moves to Italy. She moves to Modena. Gets over there, buys her a Maserati, gets her a European racing license, and she starts racing. And that's how these two meet. They both meet between their love of racing and
They race cars together. They did a lot. And, of course, begin to build cars together. Any good racing couple would. But she's like an heir to, like if you read more about her, you know, what was that Kentucky Derby horse? Irish War Whiskey or something like that. Irish War Horse. That's one of her horses. She raised horses for Kentucky Derby and all that stuff. Was a big part of that. And has a whole legacy in Kentucky, like racing horses. Got granddaughters and stuff. Daughters running it now. Alejandro falls in love with the Ford V8s. He likes the way they run. He likes the way they tune. Several of his cars have different Ford V8s in them. Like I said, that first race car had that Cortina four-cylinder that was built out. He ends up having a really long relationship with Ford. In fact, he eventually... Because like during the 70s, De Tomaso is like the Volkswagen group now. They were just buying shit up. They bought Benelli. Back when Benelli was a... Benelli also makes shotguns, but Benelli... That started from the Benelli Motorcycle Company. Benelli was a motorcycle company. And he buys Moto Guzzi. He buys Ghia Coachworks, Vinal. Benelli made shotguns and motorcycles for a little while. And they sold them all in the Montgomery Ward's catalog. But he buys up all these holdings. He eventually, I think he buys Maserati in like 75 and saves Maserati when they're going bankrupt. And they're having all kind of issues. I'm sure had something to do with his wife because she was a big Maserati fanatic. She liked racing Maseratis. But he has a long relationship with Ford. In fact, he eventually sells Ford Ghia Coachworks in like 1973. And of course, Ford wants to put that name out as much as they can. That's why if you see some of those 74 Mustang 2s and stuff, they'll say Ghia Coachworks, you know, down there and everything. And they made one car. I can't remember what the name of it's called. Should have wrote that down. But then after he gets with this guy that's a designer for Ghia, his name's Tom Diarda. Tom Diarda. And if you're a car magazine buff and you've been reading car magazines for the last 20 years, you've probably read articles by Tom Diarda. He was an American-born designer that was like the lead man at Ghia. And Alejandro gets with him and says, I got this idea for this car. It's the Pantera. And he said, I don't want to do the steel backbone design that we've been doing. He wants to do a full monocoque design. Which monocoque design, if you know, is where the vehicle derives its strength from the bodywork, basically, from the like a shell. I think that's like a French word that means shell or some shit like that. There's semi-monocoque where they have like ribs and, you know, subframes and stuff, but in a lot of, you'll hear oftentimes people will confuse unibodies and call them monocoque design, and they're not really. True monocoque design, it's the shell of the car that the car derives its strength from. And he had this idea, and Tom put it to work, and it becomes the blueprint for the company, is this design process. They debuted the Pantera at the New York Auto Show in 1970. And it was the only thing, the only criticism it had was the seats. Nobody liked to see it. It had these slatted kind of weird seats in it. So they swapped those out and they beefed the interior up, but they rushed the car to market. And it was because it's another, I told you, I'm a big fan of Lee Iacocca. Lee Iacocca is the genius behind all this. Lee Iacocca spoke fluent Italian. He was big into the Italian design cars. He knew Italian sports cars were going to be a big piece of the American market. He knew the Italian design was going to be big in the United States. He knew it. He wanted to be the first to market doing it, you know, as far as an American car company. So he's been over there hanging out with them. He's, of course, the big reason they went with the 351 Cleveland as the original power plant of the car. Now, later versions of cars have 302, and there's another engine they used. I can't remember what it is. I think maybe it's a 351 Windsor. But originally, it's the 351 Cleveland, right? Which is one of my favorite Ford engines. I love the 351 Cleveland myself. 351 Cleveland has a special sound to it. It's just it's a fun old pushrod V8 that just, it has a sound to it that cannot be duplicated. The Boss 351Cs and the Mustangs were hot engines. And that was kind of, the Pantera followed the Mustang in that whatever the Mustang had, the Pantera had, drivetrain-wise, as far as that power plant. Has a ZF transaxle, you know, it's a German company. If you've worked on, they mostly back in the 50s built transmissions, synchronized transmissions. They're a transmission builder from Germany. And they mostly built, like if you've ever worked on heavy trucks from the 50s and 60s, you probably worked on a ZF manual transmission, old fire trucks and concrete trucks, shit like that. You probably beat your way around a ZF transmission at some point. And the ZF transaxle, of course, is the same thing they put in the GT40. You know, Pantera and the GT40 share a lot of roots. But it was like a... I don't know, it was like a... I wouldn't say a working man's GT40, but it was an attainable. You know, back then they didn't make very many road-ready GT40s. There were like five or six of them, maybe. But this was a car they were going to produce. This was going to be a production car. It had air conditioner. It had electric windows. The doors buzzed when you opened them. It had all the things people wanted in the interior. And the biggest thing that hurt, there's two big things that really hurt the Pantera. Of course, the gas and oil crisis was, you know, it hurt a lot of great cars. A lot of great cars did not survive the gas and oil crisis of the mid-70s. Because everybody started teaming up with Japanese companies trying to build small shit. Got better gas mileage. But one of the big things that hurt it was because they rushed the market. They had all kind of quality problems. They overheated. They had cooling problems out the wazoo. Really, a lot of Italian cars didn't have very good rust treatment anyway, so they didn't have very good rust treatment. They would rust really badly. And those early bodies, they were all built by hand, you know, in a coachworks plant. And so when you got panels that don't fit right and you're building them by hand back then, they just fill them up with solder. So a lot of them early Panteras, you know, they were just soldered up bodies all over. There's all kind of solder filling and stuff like that. So that hurt them. The bad quality hurt them. It wasn't the fastest car in the world. You know, that 351 Cleveland, as it was outfitted in the American ones, only had like eight. It had much lower compression than the European build. They only pushed about 330 horsepower. They had a more aggressive cam. They only pushed about 330 horsepower, but 330 horsepower in a mid-engine car is a different beast than 330 horsepower in a front-engine rear-wheel drive car. It's going to handle differently. It's going to grip better. It's going to, if you've ever driven a mid-engine car, you know, it's a different beast. It takes a little less power. It's also a pretty lightweight car. I think they, like, 0 to 60 was like 5.5 seconds. I mean, they weren't splitting at them, but. But it was like in its own market, you know. There was no market at that time for that car. You had Corvettes, which run about $6,000, right? And then you had supercars, which the Ferraris and Lamborghinis, and then you were getting into $20,000. And the Pantera hits the market at 10 grand, which puts it in a weird, it creates its own niche market. Because it's a little more affordable and attainable than a Ferrari, but it's also, you know, it's not just your best friend's dad's Corvette. It's something a little special. It's also one of the most practical, I don't know if you call it a supercar or a sports car or whatever you want to call it, but like, there's like a lot of trunk room. And then there's of course room up front. You can actually, you know, the only thing, if you're over 6 foot tall, you're not going to have headspace in that car, obviously. But if you're of average height, they were built around 5 foot nine Italians, you know, 5 foot eight Italians. They weren't built for lumberjacks. I saw Jay Leno drive one time, and he was quite compressed in it. He said he had to take his shoes off to drive it, you know, because the pedals weren't spread out far enough. And the pedals are kind of offset. Too. They had to like offset the pedals, and it's, so it's a little, but as far as sports car go, very practical. You get to drive them, and the cooling problems were fixed pretty quickly, but in the beginning they had cooling and electrical problems. It's very interesting car. I mean, engine's kind of tough to work on being a mid-engine, but you can change a gearbox in a parking lot. You know, you can change a clutch out in about 2 hours on the thing. It's also cool because of their partnership with Ford. Every part, this is the crazy thing about Pantera today. Every part has a Ford part number. And every part is still available. I think they only brought like 5,400 cars to the United States. But you can still get all the parts for a Pantera. You can still buy every part for a Pantera. And the aftermarket market for Panteras is crazy, man. They have one of the craziest little cults surrounding them. You know. Of course, they're a lot more than $10,000 now. They were marketed through, Ford decided to sell them through Lincoln Mercury dealerships, which is kind of cool. So you could like, you go to the Lincoln Mercury dealership in the early 70s and they'd have, you could get a Cougar, you get a Town Car, or you get this crazy looking sports car, right? This Pantera. I always thought that, I just think that's kind of, it's kind of a weird fit, but I would love to see a picture on them dealership where you can see a Town Car, a Cougar, and this freaking Pantera. I myself was first exposed to the Pantera through either a Hot Rod or a Motor Trend magazine. I had a, you know, along with my collection of funny books, Granny would also, if she saw them at garage sales, buy me car magazines. And I had a collection of Hot Rod and Motor Trend magazines that went way back into the 60s. And those were some of my reading fodder as a young teen. I would go through them. And if you're a fan of either of those two magazines, and you know who Bob Peterson is, Bob Peterson founded both those magazines. But I had one of those magazines where they had done the breakdown on that Pantera. And I thought it was one of the coolest looking cars I'd ever seen in my life. Because it looked like one of them Ferrari. It looked like, you know, one of those race cars from overseas, except it had this big old Ford pushrod V8 in it right in the middle of it. And that was just,
I was already a fan of that. You know, I was already a fan of Mustang. I was a big Mustang kid already. I love Mustangs. I had my wall in my bedroom. I had the sliding closet doors, and those sliding closet doors were, some teenagers might have had pictures of pretty girls and stuff. I had, one door was covered in aircraft from a popular mechanics magazine. There was a couple magazines when I was a Hot Rod, Motor Trend, Popular Mechanics, and Popular Science. These were my magazines I liked to read. These were my, I was a big fan. My dad, every once in a while, would buy Popular Mechanics. And if I got to go to the store, sometimes I'd get me a Popular Science when the new one come out. I would absorb these magazines into my mind. And then the ones that had cool aircraft, I would cut pictures out and I would post them on this one door of my closet. Had all these photos, the first V-jet helicopter with the single rotor that had the jet turbine exhaust through it, and Chinooks, and just all kind of stuff. I was wildly interested in aircraft as a young man. Not as much now. I mean, I still enjoy it, but. And then that other door was nothing but Mach 1s, early 70 Ford Mustangs. Those were my favorite years. Couple Fox bodies and a bunch of Panteras. That's what was on that door. I just had a thing. Those were the cars I dreamed about. Something about that houndstooth hood on that Mach 1 just did it for me. I always wanted me a Mach 1. They handle like a potato, but I still want one. I remember even on up into the 90s, you know, I would read these magazines. I found out that Bob Peterson had bought Elvis's Pantera, which I was already a huge Elvis fanatic. If you've watched podcasts any period of time, you know my background with that, why I grew up just in love with Elvis, fascinated with Elvis Presley as a result of my grandmother. And boy, if this is a good enough sports car, you didn't hear about Elvis buying sports cars. Elvis bought Lincolns and Cadillacs, you know. Preferably Cadillacs. After his divorce from Priscilla, he was dating some Southern beauty queen, Linda something or other, Linda Thompson maybe. And she liked sports cars. And they went up to the Cadillac dealership in Memphis, and Cadillac dealership in 1974 had a used 1972 Pantera. Elvis bought it for $2,500, a yellow Pantera. It's that the car on the cover art for this episode. That's a picture of Elvis in that Pantera driving it. And you know, legend goes, one night Elvis goes out there to start the car. Of course, Pantera's having electrical problems and acting up and doesn't start. And Elvis, being the calm, rational human being we all know him to be, reached down off to his ankle, grabbed a small caliber pistol out of his ankle holster, and shot the steering wheel. And that bullet ricocheted off the steering wheel, hit the windshield and blew the windshield out. Then he got mad again and he shot the dash. Then he shot the door. Then he got out of the car and he shot the tire out. 1976, he sells that car. I think they repaired the bullet hole in the door, but the other bullet holes are still there. And there's all these crazy stories in the 80s, like people trading gems and stuff to drive that car. Supposedly these European dudes wanted to drive the car Elvis drove, and they basically, they traded $2 million worth of like gems and rubies to go drive this car. Car has a crazy history, man. Elvis's Pantera. But late 90s, Bob Peterson, who already owned Steve McQueen's Jaguar XKSS, and he had Rita Hayworth's custom 53 Cadillac. Yeah, he's got some cool stuff. If you ever been to the Peterson Museum, it's amazing. But Peterson buys Elvis's Pantera. Boy, then I'm locked in. I'm like, boy, got to have me a Pantera. Elvis had him a Pantera, you know? Right there. He liked my two favorite cars, Cadillacs and Panteras.
That's his shit. Elvis apparently didn't like his very much because he shot it up and sold it, but. If I ever had money to buy Elvis's car, I told y'all I'd piss everybody off because I'd drive the piss out of him. One of the periods of time right after high school, and I've told y'all stories about it, it's when I had my El Camino still and I moved. It's when I was living in Kilgore. Kind of bouncing between jobs, looking for something to do. Ugh. Got a hair or something driving me crazy in a mustache. One of these periods of time, I was living in Kilgore, I briefly worked at a place called Bill Wilson Pontiac. Should be right there off 59. Is it 59? I think it's 59. I didn't work there a long time. I got fired. They called me Pork Chop when I worked there, man. Because I didn't have a lot of money. I wore overalls. I think at the time, I just sold the El Camino, and I just bought that little S10 from my dad. It was like an 86 S10, little gray and black two-tone. It had blown to my Papa Clark as well. And then my dad bought it and did some work on it and drove it for a little while. And decided he didn't like it. I bought it from him, like $500. But I just wore overalls to work every day, and you know, ball cap. And one of them salesmen that worked over there at Bill Wilson, or one of the floor managers, I don't remember. I think it's the floor manager for the shop. Told me I reminded him of them pig farmers out in East Texas. He said, "Boy, you dress like a pig farmer." And he said, "Oh, Pork Chop." And they just started calling me Pork Chop after that. It's not my favorite nickname I've ever had, but whatever, it is what it is. One of the older salesmen that had been there for a little bit, he was friends with this dude named Ron Binkman. Ron Binkman had a bunch of money and he had a couple different cars. And he would come over there to dealership visit his buddy whenever he was in Kilgore. He lived in Longview. One day I was out there taking a break, having a cigarette, and come back from my lunch break, and old Ron Binkman, he pulls up in this yellow 1972 Pantera. God, it sounded good. I was fascinated. I was staring, you know. It's not the kind of shit you see in Kilgore all the time. Well, I'd lived in Houston. I hadn't seen no Panteras, not in person. Read about them, had pictures of them. Never seen one in person. This thing pulls up right where I work. He knew who I was. I walked over there. I was just staring at him. He said, "What you think about that thing, boy?" I said, "Man," I said, "I love Panteras." He goes, "You know what it is." He said, "Half people around here don't know what it is. They ask me what it is every time I get out of the car." I said, I recognize that Pantera anywhere. It's got 351 Cleveland in it. He was like, "Yeah, man." He goes, all right, Pork Chop. Know a little something about the ride, man. I watched him pull out of the parking lot of that thing. He got on it a little bit, getting on 59 for me. I was like, yeah. Went back to work. A couple days later, he comes back to the dealership. He's in one of his, I think he had a Cadillac at the time. He had some Buick at the time, some real nice Buick. It's like 97, 98. It was some real nice Buick. And he brought it over there to be serviced or something. And it was Bill Wilson Pontiac and Buick. Yeah. It was some kind of Buick. I don't remember the deal, and nothing I gave a shit about, you know. He comes over there. I take the Buick back around, do oil change, all that stuff on it. He said, "Pork Chop, you interested in making any?" Most of the guys in there were older. I was the only young dude in there. I was kind of like the porter. I did everything. And, you know, all the young dude shit, clean up car, wash cars, all that stuff. And he said, "Pork Chop, you need to make a little extra money." And I did. I did need to make a little. You're a young man. You always need to make a little extra money. Hell, I'm 47 now. I still need to make a little extra money. He said, "Well," he said, "man, I got some work out at my place in Longview. We'll come over this weekend. I'll put you to work." I said, "Man, that sounds all right to me, Mr. Ron. I appreciate it." Yeah, don't worry about it, Bo. He gives me the address, tells me what time to be there on Saturday. Boy, all right, man. He's got a nice house in Longview. I can't remember exactly where it was in Longview. Nice house. Got a swimming pool. Got a little cabana thing out back. I don't know how many bedrooms the house has. One of those old ranch style builds. Big drive. It's got a 4-car freaking garage on it. He had some cool stuff. He did have a Cadillac. It's like an early 90s. It was a beautiful car, though. Wife had a freaking Corvette. And mostly just like yard work stuff. He had a bunch of yucca plants and palm trees in the back, and I would pick up all the mess from them and put it out the curb, or if it's too much, I put it in back at little S10 and haul it off and clean up around the pool area and stuff. If they had a party, I'd clean up around the party, the leftover party trash and stuff like that. Well, there, worked for him a couple of days. He always paid me good, man. I give me 40 or 50 bucks for the day, which is pretty good money in them days. Carried me a long way. He always smelled like rum, man. He liked his Bacardi rum. Well, that Bacardi was big shit in the 90s. He liked that Bacardi rum, man. I don't know how many of them Bacardi bottles I'd pick up. I'd be cleaning up around there. He'd hang out there in that cabana and drink Bacardi and listen to like yacht rock. You either know what yacht rock is or you don't, but that was his shit. He'd listen to yacht rock, get hammered out there in the cabana. And he was probably, I would say he was probably in his late 50s. Definitely a Texan, had the accent. He was definitely East Texan. I don't know what Mr. Ron did for money. You know, that wasn't none of my business. But he clearly made a bunch of it. His wife, I had to guess, man, she was probably she was in her early to mid 40s. But she looked in the face, she looked like Kirstie Alley. Right? She's a beautiful woman. Very pretty. But I didn't know much about plastic surgery back then, but I suspect her body had been worked on. Because she was pretty, she was a lot. She was a lot for a young Pentecostalish boy. He would be over there getting hammered, listening to yacht rock, and she would come out there in suntan in a 2-piece bathing suit, which was quite a thrill for me because I hadn't seen a lot of 2-piece bathing suits in my life at that point. Pentecostal girls, by and large, wear shorts or skirts to the lake and wear their skirts and their t-shirts while they swim. So this gal would come out and put her headset on and lay out there in this 2-piece while I cleaned up stuff in the yard. Sometimes I would had a gas pressure washer. I'd pressure wash the driveway and the front of the brick house for him and the sidewalk and all that kind of stuff, and then sweep the water out. And Man, sometimes she would exercise on that back porch, and her exercise outfit wasn't a whole lot more than her swimsuit, except tennis shoes. And I ain't even gonna lie, man. She would get out there, exercise by that pool, listening to Taylor Dayne and singing Taylor Dayne. And that was some kind of, it was a lot for a young man. I sort of liked what he had going on in his life. I'm like, I don't understand why you're drunk in the cabana. I'd be over there singing Taylor Dayne with her. Yeah, she'd wear this old leotard thing, get out there and jump and grind and jazzercise, whatever the shit it was. It's like going to work and watching a music video while you work. On Friday, I went over there to work after work, do some work for him. I was picking up yucca cuttings, and then he wanted me to pressure wash that driveway, and had the garage door closed. Boy, I'm out there pressure washing shit out of that driveway. Summertime, so it's still kind of light out, you know. It's not dark yet, 6 or 7. And usually when I was over there working, I didn't see a whole lot of him because he'd just be in the back in that cabana and had like some little blinds, some little drapes and stuff. And he'd just be in there drinking and jamming out to his music, doing his thing. I remember all of a sudden he popped out the front door. Shorts on, got a button-up shirt, Bacardi, a drink in hand. Comes out there, cut the pressure washer off. He says, "Hey there, old son. I need you to give me a ride to the liquor store." Dadgum, these allergies. I said, "Yes, sir, man, it's not a problem." Roll the pressure washer up. I go there and start washing my hands. I turn around. I start walking towards my S10. That's where he kind of like watched me. And he goes, "Where the hell are you going?" He goes, "We ain't taking that beer can." Which I was miffed. But he was right. It was kind of like a beer can. He turns around, hits his garage door opener, and that garage door opens up. There's that freaking yellow Pantera. We start walking in the garage. I start following him in the garage, and he goes over his little rack. He all his keys. He pulls them Pantera keys off and throws them to me. Right there. He said, "This is what we're taking." I can hardly believe it, man. I'm in my overalls. I start walking around towards the driver's side of the car. And then push button door. Bloop, open that door. He's already down in the seat. I sat in that thing and it's... I was already kind of a big boy, little type. I knew shit. I shut that door. That key in. It's just speedometer, tachometer, and then a whole row of dials right here down the middle. I think it maybe even had an altimeter. Hell, I don't know. His had a CD player in it. I remember that. It had a Kenwood CD player in it. And his was fixed up. He had done, it had the chassis. I had seen the hood and stuff popped up, had the chassis stiffening stuff. He had had that 351 Cleveland gone through. It was built to the hilt, had a real choppy cam in it. Still had that 4-point exhaust, right? Those 4 points coming up in the back. He said, he looked over, he goes, boy, you know how to drive a gated shifter? I said, hell yeah. Well, I had never even seen a gated shifter in my life. I didn't know what the hell a gated shifter was. but all the shift points were nice and lined up by a metal plate. I later on learned that's what a gated shifter is. And he looked at me. I'm very grinned. I started up and the sound. Like, I already love the way a 351 Cleveland sounds. The way it sounds in that car, and they got running through that race car type, that 4-point exhaust, it still kind of has that Italian sports car sound to it, you know, that melodic kind of, it still has that, but it also has the bass of an American pushrod, you know what I mean? Like, it still has it all. Put it in reverse, clutch is pretty stiff on it, kind of jerked us out, and he kind of looked at me and eyebrow raised, had his old Ray-Bans on. He's still drinking that Bacardi, though, right? He says, yeah, man. And I backed up and turned it around in his driveway and pushed that clutch in. I just gave it a little, right? And it was so responsive. Just responsive, man. Just like my foot was connected to the carburetor, you know? Just like, it was like that. I was like, yeah. And I remember he looked at me. He looked over them sunglasses. He goes, boy, I'm about to change your damn life. He was a little lit. It was a little bit of a dog leg get from reverse into first, you know. Once you get that thing into first, all them Ford gears, clack, 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 just smooth as you want it to be, baby. And we pull out and drive. I mean, whoo! It wasn't like noisy inside like a lot of sports cars. All you could really hear was the gearbox. That ZF gearbox, you hear that? Why? Now you know it's getting some stress put on it. He said, take me over to Harley's Cut Rate, you know? And that's, I don't, you know, in Longview, Texas, so there's chain of liquor stores. That started during the Prohibition. This guy in the 20s, old man, Mr. Harley, he was a bootlegger. And then I think he opened up some of the first liquor stores in Kilgore and Longview. And those Harley's Cut Rate liquor stores were all over Longview. This one that we went to was out on 80 West, you know, like you're going out towards Gladewater. He said, take me out there, Harley's Cut. We get on 80. Oh, I think the old man's probably passed away. Mr. Harley's probably passed away by now. I heard some other dude bought it, but he kept the name the same and everything. But I think they're still there. Harley's Cut Rate Liquor or Harley's Liquor Stores. But we're going to Harley's Cut Rate out there on 80. There wasn't a lot out there back in, you know? Get out there. We're cruising through Longview, man. You know, I'm like hoping some of my friends see me. It's a small town. I just want some of the old gals. Somebody see me that knows me. This freaking Pantera. Well, that car accelerator, I don't know if we got to 0 to 60 in 5.5 seconds. It sure didn't feel like no 5.5 seconds. Felt about like one. Just go, man. That car would just grab the road and go. When we got done at the liquor store, he goes there and gets his Bacardi. He comes out, refills his little drink, sticks that Bacardi down there between his legs. And I get ready to pull out a liquor store, like head back towards his house. He says, "No, no, go west, take it, hang it right." We maybe right. I don't remember what side of the road we're on. But he said, "Go out towards Gladewater." He fires up that CD player. It's Kenny Loggins, bro. I don't know if it's Kenny Loggins' greatest hits, but all the songs with Kenny Loggins. Right off the bat, just Kenny Loggins, man. I heard the Top Gun song, Danger Zone. He cranks that stereo up. I don't give a shit about that music. He says, "Get in it, man. Get your foot off in it, man. Feel it, feel this car." Boy, I just rolling through these gears, man. And this car just wants another gear. Every gear you finish, it just wants another, you know. You can put a 12-speed gearbox. That car will still be looking for another gear. You didn't feel like it, but you're going 100 miles an hour, you know? You don't feel like it. Things like a gearbox. Kenny Loggins yapping away about the Danger Zone. I'm focused. He's enjoying his Bacardi. I remember we blasted by Lake Dev. Like, I almost didn't even see Lake Dev. We blasted by it. So, just it was just a shot. I know I had to slow down when I got into Gladewater, but he wanted to keep going, man. We went all the way to Hawkins. You know, it's a little bit, it's a 45 minute drive, you know, get out there to Hawkins. It's dark now, man. We're still flying. Right before we get to Hawkins, he's like, I don't want the old lady worry. Let's turn around. Let's get headed back. I mean, right in the highway. I just dropped it down, second gear. Cut that thing, hit it. It didn't even bar. It just yank, you know, just put you back in that seat. Let's go. I can't even talk now, man. We get back to this neighborhood, I'm out of words to say, you know. I've had an experience. He did, in fact, change my damn life. And he's getting a kick out of it. You can tell he's enjoying the shit out of me driving this car. He's steady going through that Bacardi. He's telling me a lot of shit about Kenny Loggins that I'm not interested in. Pull back up in his driveway. I pull back in the garage. Park. I don't even want to turn that car off. I just want to listen to it. I just want to listen to it. I just want to sit in and listen. Turn the car off, hand him the keys. I get out, shut the door. Very gently. This thing was pristine. It was beautiful. He says, "Man, I appreciate it. You all right, boy. You all right. What you got left to do out there?" I didn't get to finish pressure washing. He said, "Man, we'll worry about it next time." He said, "Do me a favor, put that pressure washer up for me and cut that water out." Yes, sir. Cut the water out, put the pressure washer up. I go back around back. He's in the cabana again. Now his lady's out there with him. They're grinning and laughing, having drinks. She's got some wine. He's listening to see Kenny Loggins out there now. He's Kenny Loggins. This dude loves him from Kenny Loggins. I was like, "Miss Ron, I'm going to head out." You know, that's usually when he'd pay me. I'd let him know I was leaving. He'd give me a little money. He said, man, that was a gas, man. You drove the shit out of that car. I like that. He reached in his wallet, pulled his wallet out, thumbed through there, pulled out a $100 bill, gave me a $100 bill. He said, "Go have you a good time tonight, man. Go find you some fun." Yes, sir. "All right, pork chop. I'll holler at me next week. I'll let you know if I need anything done." And I did. I went work for him a few more times, did some more work on his house and stuff out there. pressure washing and all that sort of shit. And he never let me drive that Pantera again. I was always hoping every time I went over there, like, is this going to be the day? Please get drunk and need a ride to the liquor store. Please get drunk and need a ride to the liquor store, Mr. Ron. Such as was my luck, he never got drunk and needed to ride to the liquor store again. At least not for me. Boy, I'm sure. Every time I went over there, ooh, is this nice? You'll be drunk? Let me drive that liquor store. I moved back to Houston. I didn't live there a long time that go around. Y'all know the story. I moved back to Houston. My life took other paths, but I can tell you that in all the years since then, I've never stopped dreaming about a Pantera. They're there now. You can buy a decent one now, one that's been gone through and it's in pretty good shape. The Pantera Club's a really cool, useful thing. And if you get with the Pantera Club, a lot of times guys getting older, they'll sell them and stuff, you know. You buy one through those dudes, they'll tell you everything you need. They put together all kind of resource material and, you know. You can buy you a decent Pantera between $90,000 and $100,000. You can get one still to this day. At least the ones what I like, you know. I don't care for them Lamborghini looking ones that they made later. I want a Pantera with a 302 in it. Sorry, I don't. I want that 351 Cleveland. I want that big bass sound. I want that big push rod American V8 sweating blood and muscle. I want that sound. Some dude, I posted the cover art. This dude, Gary, was like, man, Joe, with a Hellcat motor. And I just almost fainted. Like, no, I don't want a damn Hellcat motor in it. I don't need 1,000 horsepower mid-engine car. Mid-engine car, you just need about 400 or 500. You can get that out of a 351 all day long. You don't need. Everything doesn't have to be that, you know. Gas Monkey and that stupid EcoBoost Panther. Like, that's why you put an EcoBoost in a Ford Courier. Yeah, you got my attention. My ears are perked. But don't ruin a classic sports. I don't know. I'm not even a sports car guy, man. I never gave two shits. I have ridden in some badass Ferraris and Lamborghinis, and I can honestly tell you, I just don't give two shits about them. The only one I did ride in I really liked was Lamborghini Miura. But outside of that, I just don't give two shits about Lamborghini styling. I don't really care that much about Ferrari styling. They just don't do it for me. They're not my type of shit. And the Pantera is different. It's that sexy styling, but also that big old pushrod V8 in. It's a mixture of many things. I'm telling you, I hit a Diamond Gem lick. I get that Diamond Gem status. I get a little. If I ever get in a position that I can afford me a $90,000 to $100,000 car just to be my driving car. Ooh. Y'all know it. You probably see me. I like the dark blue ones. Jay Leno has a dark blue one I really like. But I also like them yellow ones. You see. You come to one of my shows, there's a yellow Pantera out there. That's when I did it. That's when I got that money. Well, I drive the shit out of that car. Yes, sir. Run a little shorter this week. That's all right. I wanted to get back to the car side of things and share that with you guys again. I think it's time for some testimonials, if you will. We do some testimonials? Hell yeah. And I'm actually prepared this week. Look at old pork chop showing up ready. There's some comments from last week's episode where I had my brother here visiting. He brought his Ford Lightning, his second gen Lightning. I showed some footage. If you didn't watch all the way in, go back and watch all the way in. Showed a little footage of him cranking up, racking it off for me a couple of times. He won't. My brother's so respectful, he won't even do that. I was like, oh, we're fine, man. Rack that shit off. At Jake of all trades, master of fun. A young man would have left a cloud as he rolled out. An old man is much more wise. Boy, you wouldn't catch me. My brother wouldn't do that shit in the neighborhood. He just has some feelings about that. And he would never, to him, that would be a form of disrespect. You just wouldn't see Joey doing that. Yeah. I was hoping he's going to hit it and bark him tires a little bit for us when he got on Hardy. But he just kind of took off nice and slow. And I wouldn't have minded hearing it bark. But yeah, Joey's a very respectful person. He wouldn't do that. At Patrick-D2K5B. I once parked my 05 Impala in the side yard one night completely wrecked. Come out the following morning and had to use my truck to get it out. I don't know if I've ever woke up to a wrecked car. Well, it was that little Datsun that time, but it turns out I physically wrecked it with my body. But I woke up and had to go look for some cars. I can tell you that, boy. I've had to play the old Saturday morning Easter egg hunt, try to remember what bar I left my car at or where I got tired of driving it and left it and got another way home. One time we hid my friend's H3 Hummer like an Easter egg on his dad's on her dad's property. We were tired of listening to her yap about it. We thought it'd be funny. We got up early in the morning, found the keys to it, and drove it way out on the property, hid it in the creek. We didn't know she was behind on payment. She thought the damn repo man come and got it. She didn't laugh about that much. I did. I thought it was funny. It was at Easter. I mean, how perfect is that? At Trevor Floyd, 8447. Some watch Fox. Excuse me. Some watch Fox. Some watch CNN. Who cares? Me, I watch NASCAR and Wrecking Yard on Sunday and pray the week won't be too bad. Well, I appreciate you tuning in, Trevor. That's I don't get too warped. You know, y'all know I don't really talk much about politics, that kind of stuff. I don't think this is the place for that. Shop wasn't the place for that when I was growing up. You know, shop's where you talk cars, life, love, friendships, argue about name bullshit nobody cares about. Not politics. I appreciate you tuning in and watching. That's all I really wanted this to be, was just some place for people to land. Just to have a nice time. Just chill out. Listen to me tell a story or two. Maybe enjoy some nostalgia. And go on with your week. It's a Sunday evening service, but a different type. You won't find no fire and brimstone here. You guys are in Central Texas area. I'm going to be in Bastrop March 29th, performing at Film Alley. I have not been back there in a few years. Looking forward to getting back to Film Alley. That's a fun little room. I would implore you to buy your tickets now because the sales are doing pretty well. So I'm hopeful we're going to maybe get a sellout in Bastrop. That would be nice. There have been pitiful Oklahoma shows. Follow me on Facebook. I don't know if you saw, I posted they're doing a big fundraiser for the people in Stillwater, Oklahoma, who have lost their homes, stuff from wildfires. And it's a rough go. And I forgot to bring them out, but I was telling y'all a little bit last week about Diecast Breakdown, about doing that podcast, about their little charitable event they do, where they go donate cars every year. And so we've started every time go to the grocery store and Rachel or the boy pick out a car. And so I'm going to display them in here as the collection builds. I've got a small collection of package cars. We start purchasing that we're going to give away along with the diecast breakdown. We're going to go donate them on their day, October 15th. Try to put some toys in the hands of some kids that need them. That shit just makes me feel happy all over. I've been meaning to talk about this. It's been a week or two, a couple of weeks. But there's a little loss in our family. Not my particular immediate family. If you're a longtime listener to the show, you know about my cousin Shane. The Camaro episode was all about him and his wife, Julie Sullivan, Longmire. This time period I'm talking about today, this time period where I was working at Bill Wilson Pontiac, I was in the church and I was spending a lot of time with Shane and Julie. I was kind of like their little third wheel while they were dating for a while. And, me and Tommy LeBeuf took turns being the third wheel on their dates. And, I periodically had a little crush on Julie's younger, one of her younger sisters. But Julie's father, who I mostly knew as Brother Sullivan, passed away just recently. And he was a fantastic human being. I just always really liked Brother Sullivan a whole lot. He was clearly a fantastic grandfather, and I just know his grandkids loved him and adored him. And I knew, and Julie's one of the best people I know. I really think the world of her, and the friendship I've been able to have with her for a large part of my life has been very meaningful to me. And though I didn't know her father for a long time, there was a short time about this time period when I was living in Kilgore, where I would see him a lot. I spent a lot of time at Sullivan's house over in Liberty City. And they were a big part of our church, of the First United Pentecostal Church over there in Kilgore. And so they feel like family to me. They feel more like family than friends. And I was sad to hear the news of Mr. Sullivan. I followed along as he was in the hospital, and just things didn't work out for him. And, he played instruments. He was a wildly interesting guy to me. Like I said, I only knew him for a short, but when I was younger, there was a period of time where it may have been brief that he had a little shop in Kilgore, and he was a metal detector. He was a metal detector guy, and he would go out to like Civil War battlefields, and he had he had Civil War belt buckles and the hat buckles and the mini balls and all kind of horseshoes. He just had all kind of neat Civil War memorabilia he had found over the years. He had it displayed in that shop, and I was kind of a nerd about it. I like to go over there and check it all out. And I'll never forget that I was in that shop one day with Brother Sullivan, and I was just asking him dumb questions, and he tolerated me, you know. He was good to us boys in the church. He was kind to us. Us young men. He was easy to talk to. And I was in there asking him dumb questions about all his metal detector stuff. And I said, you know, I've used a metal detector a couple of times, and they just beep all the time when you go, or so. And a lot of times just a pop lid or whatever, you know. Like, I was like, you've been doing it a long time. How do you know when to dig? Because it might be something good. And he just kind of chuckled and sat back in his chair, and he said, you don't. He said, but Jerry, anything good is worth digging to find. And boy, that has stuck with me a long time. I thought about it when he passed the other day. He was just a good man. And if you're a prayer type, you know, I wouldn't mind if you sent up a prayer for his family. They're grieving. They lost a good one. And if you're not, that's okay too. But just I'd see them go through that kind of loss, because they're a good bunch of people. I, of course, just love Julie and her kids. And nobody wants to lose their father, you know. That's just that shit he said to me. He stuck with me a long time. He was a kind man. I think we're going to wrap it up there today. Heard the update last week. We're working on getting the Volkswagen down here. I'm excited. I'm starting to get excited about the project. Mine's going all different kinds of ways, all different kinds of plans. Hope you're getting around the obstacles in your life. Sweep the best you can. Like Trevor said, you know, I hope it's going to be a good week. Not too scary. Trying to get too wrapped up in the politics, the divisionary stuff. Try to remember what we're all here for. Us love each other. It's not to tear each other down because we believe different things. I'm rooting for you. I tell you that every week, and I'll keep telling you that until you believe it. I'm rooting for you. I want every one of you to find the good things in life, if you haven't already. And when you find them, I want you to just hold on to them as long as you can and enjoy every minute of it you can. I appreciate y'all rooting for me. Wouldn't mind if you sent some positivity my way. I got some angles I'm working. I'm hoping one of them comes up good. And I could use y'all. Y'all are my A1s. Y'all are my people that watch and follow this podcast. Y'all are what I consider my A1s. A whole lot of people. I did Truck Astrology 100 this week. That's crazy. I added them all up. And if I put them all together, they come out to an hour and 25 minutes. And there's roughly 560 jokes in an hour and 25 minutes. I had a fan ask me if I'd put them all together as one video and put it on YouTube so he could just play it in the waiting room of his car shop. And I was like, you know what? I might just do that. It'd be a little bit of work. Them early ones, the production value on them is not good. I've even thought about going back re-recording some, but I hate to take away from what the spark was there originally. Yeah, any little positivity y'all throw my way, I sure appreciate it. It means a lot to me and my family. I'm rooting for you. I promise you I am. And remember, anything good, it's worth digging for. Anything good, it's worth digging to find it. Y'all have a good week. I'll see you next Sunday. Tell it to my heart, I can feel my body rock every time you call my name.